Welcome back to Normies Like Us, the podcast that reminds you it's hip to be square. And on a very special episode, we turn back the clock and head back to the Sengoku period of Japan. That's right, we're talking Warring States and Hulu's new miniseries, Shogun, on Normies Like Us.
My master asks for you to draw a map of the world.
Japan is here.
My country, England, is on the other side of the world.
To vanquish our common enemies.
You heard it up top. We are staying literary as we tackle another novel adaptation when we're doing the hit new miniseries Shogun on Hulu. Here on Normies Like Us with your hosts, Barbarian Colin.
This is a Lady Mike Rhea. Praise be.
I like your cross.
I'm learning Portuguese. This is Anjin Kab-sama.
Anjin Kab-sama. We don't use sama for Anjin Kab, though.
Not for you.
No, I'm a Hatamoto.
You're a Hatamoto now. That's right. We've got to show some respect on your name.
That guy's Hatamoto. A Hatamoto. A number of people would just say, do you hear? That guy's a fucking Hatamoto now.
That guy's a Hatamoto.
Here's your house and your wife. And
That's how it goes.
Yep. This is yours now. We're talking Shogun. You're going to hear a lot of great lingo like that. You'll learn what a Hatamoto is maybe on this episode. But as we're saying, the new samurai spectacular kind of Game of Thrones style show that's been airing on Hulu. We got the first four episodes at the time of this, right?
Look, Booktober continues here on this podcast.
Yes. Right?
Wow.
As we continue our strange literary
book off. Yeah.
Butcharch.
Yeah.
End of
yeah.
Bookuary into Barch. Look, we talked Stranger Tides, a book adaptation. We talked Starship Troopers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Here we are.
We did Dune as well. Don't forget
Dune. We're talking Shogun. My favorite. Now. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Shogun. It's based on a novel. It's a mini series, and it was already adapted once before in the 80s. As Colin, you sent the trailer for that version today in our chat. And it's a 10 episode miniseries. We're four episodes in. So the fifth one will be out, I believe, tonight. So. You may be listening to this. The fifth episode may be out already, so no spoilers, but we're talking the first four episodes.
Very exciting. Do you guys have any history with this? I guess let's just say for the book for now, or like the original miniseries?
I do not encountered any of this as far book or the miniseries. Yeah. This is my first
Well, or this.
Let me throw it to you guys then to say, let's do history real quick of Japan. Because I'll throw it to you guys, and I'll say real quick, I've never been to Japan. I love Japan. Fair. I love Japanese culture. I've never been to Japan. How about you guys?
Wow. Well, Jacob, of course, I have been to Japan once back in 2017, almost 7 years ago now. It'll be 7 years this fall. Long time. I wish I could go back, but I had a great time there. And I'm wearing my authentic Japanese hoppy that I bought in Japan.
Wow.
As you can see.
Now, very cool.
On the back is a logo for a Japanese baseball team that's very cool. It's like a...
The Tokyo Giants, like it seems like.
Is it Tokyo Giants?
Could be.
Oh, wow.
The logo is a baseball, animated baseball riding a baseball bat, like a witch's broom. So, pretty cool. Okay. Yeah, pretty.
I was gonna say, you look like a sushi chef or a fishmonger, maybe, if you had the headband on.
Well, that is that kind of that garb, that you would see in that kind of setting. So, it's very neat. I'm jealous of it.
And I am growing my hair out so I can put it in a some kind of top knot like they have in the show. Yeah.
You're going to shave the top of my head. Yeah. I was going to say, you're going to do the bald look? Cool.
Yeah. I'm really into it. I like Japan a lot. But of course, I'm, compared to Mike Sama here, I am not a novice in Japanese culture.
Yeah, I guess I'm a sleeper weeaboo build, because I don't really go running around talking about how much I love Goku every day or anything, but I have an interest in Japan. Yeah, RIP, Toriyama-san. But That's kind of a casual interest in like Japanese history since I was a kid. I like ninjas, you know, there's a lot of ninja stuff when we were kids and I just kind of followed that. So I know a lot. I'm not a historian, but I know a lot about this time period and I can kind of talk about who the characters are based on in real life and that sort of thing.
Have you studied the Way of the Blade, Mike?
You know, only in my backyard. I've not studied the Way of the Blade. I have been to a ninja museum in Iga in Japan when I was younger, when I was 17. And I've been to Japan three times now. And I've actually been to the Norinaga character. He's based on Ieyasu. And I've been to Ieyasu's actual grave site in Japan. And yeah. I've been to Osaka Castle, so seeing it filmed in the show is kind of interesting as part of the context. So I know a little bit about the Warring States era, Nobunaga, Hidetomi, all that stuff. But yeah,
the Great Unifier, right?
Correct.
I know a little bit about that era as well. Not compared to you, maybe, but I wouldn't say you're an expert. Mm-hmm. But of the three of us, you're probably know the most about Japan. But I do know a little bit about the real people that these characters are based on, and so yeah, it's very interesting. And actually, so I visited my mom last month or a couple weeks ago, right when this show started coming out, and I was like, "You got to check this show out, Shogun. It's really good." Mm-hmm. We watched the first episode, and my mom and stepdad, they had just been traveling, and they had just been to Osaka, and they went to Osaka Castle as well. They're like, "Oh, Osaka Castle, we've been there."
Yeah,
so. It was very cool for them to see it on film too.
No, that's awesome. And yeah, like having been there, you see places that you're like, oh, okay, I know that's the entrance to the tourism area, but to see it like in period appropriate kind of, you know, presentation it's really cool to see that.
I've never been to Osaka, but I would like to go. I've only been to Tokyo, didn't leave the Tokyo city limits, but I would love to go again and see more of Japan. Mm-hmm. I think it's a beautiful country. And I would love to go back.
Osaka's only 30 minutes
there.
Yeah. Like a English pilot in Anjin-san, but, right. Kyoto's really close to Osaka too. And they have a lot of classic temples and, you know, palaces from this era. And then we also, I want to touch on our history with our boy, Hiroyuki Sanada, producer on this, starring in it as our kind of our main lord. You know, I mentioned him in Message from Space, that Star Wars knockoff show early in his career. We've seen him in John Wick, you know, so.
Shocking.
Yeah. It's really cool to see him kind of leading this thing anyway, but.
That's right. Yeah. And he's, you know, he's had a long career and he's finally getting these roles where he can really showcase like his talents, where he's not just Scorpion in Mortal Kombat. No offense to Mortal Kombat 2021 or whatever, but
that's right. Wow.
Actually, fun fact about that. So he, of course, played Scorpion in that movie. Tadanobu Asano, who plays Yabushige in the show, the bearded guy who's kind of like following
the guy with the feathers,
Toranaga, but he's kind of his own motives. Yeah,
yeah.
He played Raiden in that same movie.
That's right.
I did not realize that. Okay. Yeah. I saw the Marvel connection with that guy, but I did not realize. Half the cast was in fucking Mortal Kombat.
So I guess we'll get into it proper, but also like the guy who plays Ishido. He was the father in the Godzilla Monarch show that I watched. And then Anna Sawai, who plays Mariko, was, you know, the main girl in the Godzilla series too. So,
she's good. I like hearing Anna Sawai. That's interesting.
She's excellent in this. I think the Godzilla is just an inferior show, the Monarch. But
yeah,
it's cool to see
a different kind of role where she's maybe a more subtle role and she's having to, you know, speak Japanese and do different things. But I'm excited to talk about this. You know, I started watching this when the first episode came out, and I was like, "You guys gotta check this out. We gotta do an episode on this."
A heavy recommendation here. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was just like, "This show has become sort of like appointment viewing for me. Where every time it's on, every week, I'm just like, yes, new episode." Really, in a way that I haven't felt maybe since Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
or at least House of the Dragon last summer. So
I would agree.
Yeah.
And this was it was always on my radar, like given my background in this kind of stuff. So I was always wanting to watch it. I just was waiting to kind of see where it was at. But when you were saying this is really, really good, I got excited and then, you know, burned
through
these first four.
I was like, you guys are going to love this, Mike especially. You know, it's going to satisfy your inner weeaboo. But I did want to mention, so that the original novel Shogun was written by a guy named James Clavell, not a Japanese guy, obviously, a British guy. But it's a very well-known novel. And then he also made a bunch of other novels that aren't necessarily sequels to this, but are it's called the Asian Saga, I guess. And it's just different stories set in different parts of Asia in different time periods. So he has one called Taipan.
Historical fiction. Cause again, it's that this isn't a direct adaptation of history, but everything is loosely based on real
people. Yeah. No, absolutely.
So he has one set in Hong Kong and one in, you know, different, different time periods and stuff, just covering historical events. So
interesting.
Very well known, I guess, novel, but I've never read it. And of course it was adapted in the 1980s. It was a huge hit, that the first miniseries. And like we were saying earlier, so the amount of people that were watching that in America, 33% of all households in the US at least watched some part of that miniseries. So it got like saturation, like, you know, isn't possible today because there's so many different channels and so many options to watch. But back in the day, people were just watching this thing like crazy. And the Hiroyuki Sanada role was played by Toshirô Mifune, of course, who is the actor that worked a lot with Akira Kurosawa, very famous Japanese actor. So,
Seven Samurai, all that. Yojimbo, he's the Yojimbo, as it were.
Maybe the greatest samurai actor of all time.
Oh, easily, easily. And then you'd think
he didn't just do samurai either. He did like, you know, gangster roles and stuff. Film noir type stuff. So he was a great leading man.
Absolutely. So, and then I think now we have Hiroyuki Sanada kind of followed in his footsteps, worked with Sonny Chiba and stuff, GI Samurai. Like, there's been it's kind of this lineage that's coming from the Kurosawa era now to here. So it's fitting that it's back in 2024. And so I can't think of a better person to lead this show. And I think we should probably jump in there. Let's, you know, get on this boat and steer into the swell.
I'm ready to do it.
I said into the swell.
Hayako. Swell.
Again.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're back here on Normies Like Us, where we are talking Shogun, the new Hulu miniseries. So Jacob said it up top. It's going to be a 10-episode event. We're not covering all that yet. We're up to episode 4 here. So we're kind of going to go through, give our thoughts and feelings on that. We'll kind of sum up where we are. Obviously, spoilers. But first, let's kind of do a little history lesson. So you said it's the Sengoku period, Mike.
Yeah. So there was Sengoku period is the Warring States. It's everyone was trying to unify Japan. Basically, the simplified version is there was three bigs, Oda Nobunaga, Hideyoshi, and Tokugawa Ieyasu, which Tokugawa is the guy that is Hiroyuki Sanada. So basically, Oda kind of got it all put together. He had to commit seppuku, so Hideyoshi took over. And Hideyoshi died in 1598, and he's actually the character who dies in this show.
Died before the show.
Sure.
So what's creating the Council of Five.
Council of Regents and all that stuff. Yeah.
So that the Council of Regents was a thing. The character names are different. So Hiroyuki Sanada's Norinaga is technically Tokugawa inspired, but then everything else after that. So that's where we're at, is kind of the first unifier guy who was running it is dead, and now the regents are set up.
So do you guys know any of that? Like, was that coming up in your history classes? Like, I know the Edo period, I feel like. Was that, like, after the Sengoku period?
That's just prior. Like, the Edo was stated, it became the capital, like, around that time. It used to be Kyoto, and it was Edo.
Right, and Edo became Tokyo, right?
And then this period lasted until the Meiji Restoration, until the 1800s. Right. This period spans from around 1600 to 1860.
So if you think about, Colin, The Last Samurai, right? That movie with Tom Cruise. That's
incredible.
That's set in like the 18-somethings. So that's like 250 years after this. That's the end of this period, right before the Meiji Restoration happened. So it's the end of the samurai period, right? That's
when they go through another wave of isolationism during that time too, and that's why Tom Cruise was like, "We're going to make them trade with us," you know? Because
right, the closed door policy that Japan kind of becomes famous with in their history. Yeah,
but this of course is set in the 1600s, the early 1600s. Another movie set in the same time period, kind of dealing with the same thing, is a movie I've talked about on this podcast before, Martin Scorsese's Silence, right?
Oh, you know what? Yes. No, it's good that you bring that up, actually, because, that's about the missionaries, right?
It's about the Portuguese, Jesuits. The Jesuit missionaries, and the persecution of Christians in that time period. Adam Driver, Andrew Garfield, Liam Neeson, you know.
Because it's not there's another thing that had to do with like factions of Christianity that we were covering,
right? Too. That too. But I was just going to mention Tadanobu Asano, who played Yabushiga, played the interpreter in Silence, so he was also in Silence.
Sure.
You go. Oh yeah,
and that's. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was talking about earlier when you said it was Booktober or Book March or whatever.
Yeah.
March.
Are pirates on Stranger Tides dealing with similar issues of religion, you know, Catholics versus Protestants and all that? So
no, and then Paul Muad'Dib Lisan al-Ghaib said Silence, you know, with the voice as a reference to that movie. Yeah.
That's right. He said, I love
that was
Silence
correct
by Martin Scorsese.
That.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's about religious things, too.
And Timothée Chalamet was in that Martin Scorsese-directed Cologne
He ad. Was. He was, Jacob. It's all so there you go. It's while we're throwing movies out, here, Mike, here's what I've been thinking about while watching this. You know what movie this miniseries makes me think of? Highlander. Because, of course, there's the Spaniard, played by Sean Connery, who lived in Japan and became a famous sword maker because he's lived throughout history, blah, blah, blah. And he talks about the Edo period, which is why I think I knew that off the top of my head or whatever.
Right, absolutely.
And him saying, like, Spaniard and talking about Portuguese, like, I've just been laughing my ass off watching this show. I love it.
It's great. I'm really excited to talk about all the different factions and things. But Mike, maybe talk a little bit about. So, of course, in this period, Japan was very separated into all these different like fiefdoms, right? Of these different daimyos who ran their own fiefdoms, and there was no, you know,
single ruler of Japan.
Right. There's no emperor at that time, I think.
Yeah.
So. That's why the great unifier, Oda Nobunaga, I believe, was called that because he unified all of Japan. But do you want to explain what a shogun is or a shogunate?
Yeah. So basically, even the show goes into it. But the point is, once someone has basically become the ruler of all Japan, you get all the kind of kingdoms under your single rule. You become the shogun, right? Which is the highest title a mortal can achieve. It's the ruler of all Japan, the highest station at which...
Right.
Literally, a human can get to, you know, so because obviously the formality here, we're dealing a lot with samurai culture in this show, and the levels of formality and the station you have and the class kind of system is very, very important. So the shogun is like near godlike in reverence and influence. Right.
And that's what I think is so interesting about this show is the sort of the different cultures and how. So obviously this one of the main characters is this guy, John Blackthorne, an English sailor. Who sort of gets shipwrecked in Japan. And of course, he was based on a real person named William Adams, who...
What a boring name. Sorry, William.
John Blackthorne, much better name.
Yeah.
But he did become like an advisor to Tokugawa Ieyasu.
And historically was like considered the first Westerner to be welcomed into Japan, Jacob, I would imagine.
Yeah, if not the first, one of the first. But because the Portuguese were already there, like, in the show. So he's the first Englishman to show up there, I guess. But he's the first Tom Cruise, right, that shows up and is like, The Last Samurai.
Well, he's like also a certain Tom that you pointed out.
That's right.
Shout out. Osmo, what's his name? Yeah, Osmo Hardy. Osmo Jarvis. Tom Hardy.
Hardy. Great value, Tom Hardy.
Yes.
Which I think at this point is almost... I don't mean that as an insult because I actually really like this guy's performance.
Same.
I am addicted to watching the choices he makes because it is like a person who if you were like, you have to act in something, and they'd never heard of acting before, but they'd seen one Tom Hardy performance and they were like, well, I'll just do what he was doing.
Yeah. He's doing a very weird voice, which I love, but every line reading is just I'm obsessed with it.
Yes.
Nice. And what's so great about the show, I think, is that, like I said, the culture clash of this English guy and then basically all the Japanese characters look at this guy as like this dirty little gremlin who refuses to bathe more than once a week and is like
barbarian. Oh, he's
fucking barbarian. Like, yeah. Get away from me.
And it's fish out of water. You know, we've kind of seen this, and we keep saying Last Samurai, which, you know, we also had Hiroyuki Sanada in that movie. But I like the way it's tackled here. It's very, East meets West. And yeah, it's the whole unstructured Western, like you're saying, London's dirty. And then you have Osaka is this kind of pristine city. And they say in The Last Samurai, like they had all of this civilization when you were like running around with bows and arrows and sticks and stones in Europe, you know, like this.
Yeah.
This kind of level of sophistication.
Right.
Yeah. The Eurocentric viewpoint of these, you know, Englishmen is like, oh, of course, we're the center of the world. We have all the technology and everything. Nobody outside of us could have anything as sophisticated as we have. And then he sees Osaka for the first time. He's like, oh, shit.
You have plays here? Yes, we have plays.
Yeah.
Right. But of course, they see the Japanese as savages, but then the Japanese see the English as savages. So it's very interesting. But
right.
I want to set up, here's my through line for why I find this show to be fascinating. Because I agree with you, Jacob. It is about the culture clashes, but it's the way that it is presented that you put yourself in his position where you go like, if I was in a high court where saying anything or being improper or, you know, doing the wrong thing or giving the wrong vibe led to people being like, you should go outside and kill yourself. Like, I would be very nervous at all times.
They set that up very well. Yeah. Like,
you're not taking my guns from me. What's going on? What are they saying? What is all this? I want to put this out there. Guys, this is an isekai. This is an isekai anime. Yeah. This is a guy who is taken to a different land who has to blend in with like the other people around him. This is the OG travelogue.
That's true. It's the old isekai, another world. That's true.
Yes.
And I do love, like you said, they set up very early on when that guy speaks out of turn, like, not only are you going to die, you're going to kill your firstborn, your whole lineage.
Right.
It's like it's a big deal. This is serious.
All because his lord was insulted and he spoke out once.
Try to back him up.
Okay, go kill yourself now.
But like, if my dad came home from work, Jacob, and was like, I really embarrassed myself today, so you have to kill yourself, and then I'm going to kill yourself, and your mom's going to live in shame, I would be very bummed out about that.
And I've always... And historically, like, it is a really, like, it was very strict, right? The honor thing was a big, big deal. But as a fan of ninjas, I always felt like that's pretty strict, man. Like, I would rather stay alive. Like, that was the ninja philosophy. I'll run away. Like, I will not kill myself. I will
leave. I'll be a ronin, dog. I'll be a fucking wild
balloon. I'll be a Portuguese in Macau.
I got no honor.
But yeah, it's very serious. It's so stakes are high.
The Japanese culture that they really highlight in the show, it is all about procedure and politeness, but you're almost hiding, you're concealing your true self. And that's what it's like. They say, like, every man has three hearts, right?
Yes.
The heart in his mouth that he, you know, speaks to the public, and then the heart that he keeps deep inside and all that.
The eightfold wall story.
She tells
later where she says, like, and it might seem like we're not present, but there's a sadness inside us. I'm like, why are you all accepting this? This is horrifying.
But that's their whole culture is based on honor and politeness, and you can not do anything that would give offense, but you're hiding, you're always just concealing your true self behind this eightfold wall. Different than, you know, the Eurocentric way of living. I think it's one isn't better than the other, but they both have their pros and cons, I guess.
Yeah. And even to this day, it's sort of like the three heart thing you're saying. They have like a hone and tatamai concept where it's like hone is what you think really, and tatamai is what you're showing the world. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like exactly how she's explaining, you know, with the eightfold. It's like,
because I think
it looks clean. Cause yeah, you know, it's
modern Japan. It's not as strict as this, but they do retain some of that where it's like they're really concealing their true feelings behind like politeness a lot of times in public, where people will be very polite, but really it's almost facetious because what they really believe is different.
You know, you can't tell. So it's like everyone says, yeah. Oh, Japan is like the nicest country, and I love Japan and people are very nice there. But it's like, because the social contract is we will be polite, there is like a layer right. beneath it that you don't know what's happening. And that's just kind of how it is to this day.
Yeah. So. Measure those court scenes and how mm-hmm. everybody has to act, how they have to move, where they're looking, what they're specifically saying,
where they're
versus
sitting.
Yeah. the Spaniard and Englishman screaming, "How's your mom? Is she a dead cock sucking whore?"
Yeah, right. Yeah,
like that.
But then again, if you
allowed to say that shit to each other, like yeah, fuck seriously. You,
yeah. But right. it's also like a class difference, because if you went yes. to like the royal court in England, you would
right,
be
of course.
Expected to act a certain way as well, right? And you couldn't just like do whatever you wanted in like the Queen of England's castle, right? So similar kind of thing. But what I think a big theme of this show for me is communication, right?
Yeah.
So we have, how do we communicate across language barriers? And then when you have an interpreter, can you even trust an interpreter who may have their own motives? Like, of course, so the English guy is Protestant. He's a Protestant Englishman. They're at war with the Catholic Portuguese and the Spaniards, right? Mm-hmm. And when he first gets there, of course, no one can speak English in Japan because right. they never met an Englishman before. So, and he can't speak Japanese. So in order to talk to these Japanese people, they have to go through an interpreter, a Portuguese interpreter who has his own motives and wants right. to kill this Englishman because they're enemies. So
yeah.
you two seem to hate each other, but don't you both worship Jesus Christ? And when he right. has to go like, yes, but it's a very different. Jesus
Christ. yeah.
And their like mind is blown because they only know yeah. Catholicism through the Portuguese. Yes. So to know that there's a whole other kind of Christianity, their minds are kind of blown by that.
Yeah. So
and then there's the differences between the Christian Japanese people who are converted and the mm-hmm. Buddhist Japanese people. So there's just a mm-hmm. lot of different things going on, a lot of different factions or different motives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you have the interest in trade that the Portuguese have that they want to control. Then they're also kind of politically maneuvering where they have one of the five lords is, you know, Catholic, or a couple of them are Catholic now. So yeah. there's a lot of political maneuvering happening. Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, so all the scenes in English are actually in Portuguese. Like when we're watching the show, that's they're speaking right. Portuguese in all the English language scenes.
So yeah, so all the Japanese characters, when they're speaking Japanese, they're actually speaking Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're speaking, of course, there's a lot of Portuguese in the show, but they're actually speaking English, because the reason for that, I think, is very simple, because it's easier to get actors that can speak English and Japanese than it is to get actors that can speak Portuguese and Japanese, right?
And I think you can only get Westerners to listen to one foreign language.
Yeah.
right.
Which I think makes sense. Like they do the Hunt for Red October thing with the Portuguese, but the Japanese is still Japanese. And I like that. And actually, I was reading the 1980 miniseries went even further, where they had all the Japanese characters speaking in Japanese and there was no subtitles.
That's so awesome.
Because they said, you know, John Blackthorne doesn't understand him, so whatever he doesn't understand, the audience doesn't understand. So,
that's a bold
wow, that's
choice.
Cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
They should have that option in the closed captioning, hardcore mode.
Well, right. speaking of options, I've worked, you guys are watching it subbed. I yeah. did the first two episodes that way, and then I just had to switch over to the dub just because it was easier for wow. me to start figuring out what characters are what characters.
No, that's
way. I've just got to pay attention too much. Yeah.
No, I won't be too hard on anybody for doing that, but being, you know, intermediate, I guess, at Japanese language, you know, I do like watching it in Japanese, but they are using like old school dialect. Like there's some mm. verb conjugations that are like crazy. Like you wow. don't hear it in regular speech. Like it's such a higher level, like upper class and like back wow. in the day. So there's some stuff that's similar, but there's some stuff that's like way different, even like grammatically. So
yeah, yeah. I think I won't begrudge you for watching it that way. But I think if you're watching the dubbed version, you might be missing some of the subtle acting of the Japanese characters, like here Yuken Sonata, where he's doing such a good job with the acting that I just love to listen to the Japanese language and like, you know, the choices he makes. And I think you might lose something with an English dub. But I haven't seen the English dub, so I don't know what it's like or anything, but,
right.
You know, I do that for anime sometimes because I feel like with anime, it's a lot easier to make a dub sound natural because it's animated instead of live action. But I really don't like when live action is dubbed over because I don't like when they're what they're saying doesn't match like their mouth moving. So
mouth stinks.
Yeah. That's just my preference, but
I mean, I'll admit to having
I think you should commit seppuku.
Yeah, I agree.
And I will, and I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I have a cheat sheet. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, remembering all these characters after four episodes, there's a lot of, you know, the names are kind of long, and if you're not used to Japanese names, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around them. You know,
I won't be saying flying at you.
Yeah. I can cover that.
I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on the characters' names and things and their relationships. I've watched every episode of this twice.
Wow.
Because I like it that much I just watch it and then I watch it again like a couple days later.
Good for you.
Because I'm just obsessed with the show. Man. Yeah. And a lot of people, they're kind of bummed out because like, this show's so good. I wish it had a season two, but of course this is a limited mini series. It's 10 episodes and that's it. That's the whole story.
And it's based on a book.
People are saying, people are like, oh man, they should. And it's so popular right now. It's been a big hit for Hulu.
Well, here's,
and they're like, you know, how are they going to, you know, capitalize on this? But what they said is they could do other novels of this guy, James Clavell, that are set in different time.
No. Here's what you do, and then we'll kind of get into what this show is doing. But you do everything right before this. You do the war for unification with Nobunaga and Ieyasu, and, you know, you do that whole period where everybody's literally vying for control.
Yeah. The problem is this show is so good because it's based on a story that was already good. It's like the Game of Thrones, when they ran out of story, they started having to make it up themselves and it wasn't as good, right?
This is that
Whites.
Yeah. Right. But based on history, this is basically the final gambit for power. But there's a lot of other power shifting you could explore if you wanted to do this style of Game of Thrones in Japan. You just set it 15 years before this.
Right.
It's like
I'm
a prequel
just worried
series,
that
but
it wouldn't be as good because it would be like
right,
the TV
like
writer, instead of
Weiss.
Adapting something, they would be
let me just go with what
up.
I'm dreaming up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So who knows? But what we have so far is excellent. And like I said, we have a fish out of water, John Blackthorn.
John Blackthorn.
Essentially, he's being used as a pawn because we learned that Norinaga is kind of on the outs. Everybody kind of wants to take over. He's the head honcho. He's in Osaka. You know, he has all the cool shit and they want it. And so Ichido is his main rival and they're kind of conspiring to vote him out of the Council of Five.
So,
which means he will die.
Right. Basically, when you get voted out, they're going to kill him and his whole family.
His whole clan.
Yeah.
Everybody works for you. Your whole company's
dead.
Oh,
so I assume you'll be committing seppuku right now. That will, I says to him, he's like, not yet.
Not yet. Hold on. Yeah.
But we should say also, so prior to the show starting, the old lord died. His heir is a young child who's not of age yet. So until the heir comes of age, it's very similar to Game of Thrones too.
Hey, right?
So
Pinky promised me as I'm getting out of here, y'all won't take power from my little boy, but the minute he becomes a man, you'll all back off and make him king.
Right.
That's a wild promise for you to like ask as your dad. It's like, okay, so, you got it, my man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the old lord dies. They appoint this council of five different lords that have to sort of democratically vote on or, you know, divvy up power that way. But of course, there's political machinations going on. And like you said, four of the five are basically trying to get Torinaga out and kill him.
Yep.
So he's in a predicament, right? Then this guy, John Blackthorn, shows up, of course. So this English and Danish boat crashes.
A Dutchman.
Dutchman, yes. And in his village, which is a village.
That guy blows his brains out off screen. He's like,
yeah, the
car. Oh, yeah.
They're all like, okay. He's like, see you later.
Right.
Which, to be fair, that is a theme that's brought back later. He's like, when you get to be as old as me, you'd rather choose how you go out. And then we see that demonstrated.
Yes.
That's suicide is a huge theme of this miniseries.
On
I'm
your
not
terms.
Kidding when I say that.
Yeah.
Yes. It is. And because, of course, the Catholics, suicide is very frowned upon in Christianity in general.
You can't go to heaven.
Yeah, where it's like it's a sin and you can't repent because you already killed yourself or whatever.
Because that's a shortcut. If heaven's so great, what am I doing down here, right?
Let me get there.
Right.
Yeah, come on.
But in Japan, it's totally different where, you know, they have ritual suicide where if you do something
suicide's
dishonorable, you're expected to commit suicide. So it's a very different thing.
Nobunaga did seppuku when he eventually got overthrown at some point. So
right.
Yeah.
Here's one other nitpick before we keep going. Now, Blackthorn is on this boat. They have not eaten for days, weeks even. We just ran out of our last bit of water. God, I hope we make landfall to the Japans. I want to point that out because I love every time somebody says the Japans. I wish it was still called that. Later, we see Discount Tom Hardy. He is ripped when he's naked. This guy has been starving to his death. He is a thick boy who is ripped, Jacob. Ripped.
Well, what are you going to do?
He could be emaciated. Why not make him a skinny guy?
Yeah.
I don't know. But start again, out if skinny. You watch the movie Silence, because Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield lost a bunch of weight for those roles to play these emaciated Jesuits who were persecuted and all that.
I'm Liam Neeson. I'm Portuguese. Can't you tell from my thick Portuguese accent? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Very good movie, though, of course. Scorsese.
I've not seen it.
I recommend it. I mean, it's you know, Scorsese has a very interesting relationship with religion. Of course, he's made other religious movies.
He is a Jesuit priest.
Yes.
I do have an interest kind of in that this time period of the show is like exploring, because I've never really I don't have knowledge of really the history of Christianity in Japan. I know it didn't really stick because it's still 90% people either don't have religion, but there's a lot of Shinto and Buddhist things that people participate in. But it's not like a religion's not like a it's a big thing, but like Christianity never stuck, I guess.
But at this time period, because of the Portuguese that were doing business with Japan, they're like, hey, we're going to bring all our priests over here. We're going to start converting your people and everything. We're going to set up churches in your villages and whatnot. So there's a certain sect of Japanese people who did convert to Christianity, but they were all almost looked down upon by the Buddhists at that time and persecuted because of that, which this show gets into less than the movie Silence. But
if my fucking king decided one day he was Catholic and that I had to be Catholic too, I would be so fucking mad about that. I'm like, you just learned about this.
And that's weirdly
they're Protestant, they're like, we hate the Catholics. So
Which what's the difference, man? I don't fucking know. Yeah. One has more chores,
A Pope. Basically the Pope, one thinks that the Pope is like the word of God, and then one thinks that the Pope is like a false prophet.
Just a dude.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we're going to war with this. But yeah, like that's a lot of how it did get spread, though, because they're like, oh, some foreigners are here, and the king will be like, oh, let me talk to them. They're like, hey, yo, king, you should do our religion. He's like, sounds good.
Oh,
and then now the whole country is doing it.
Yeah.
And you were like, I might be talking out of turn here. But I truly believe, I heard this on a podcast once, that the shaved head style started because an old lord was bald and he decreed that that was the style.
Huh. Mm. I could buy that. Like, hey, I don't know for sure, though. That's fun
much about that. Well, I was wondering why some of them have, in this show, some of them have the shaved head, and there's different hairstyles. I don't know if it has to do with sort of
rank. That's something I should learn. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That'd be a research topic.
But of course, so when Blackthorn shows up, the Portuguese are already there, and they have their priests there and stuff, and they're also doing business, but they also might be not being totally straightforward with the Japanese about certain things, like they have secret bases in Macau and all this stuff. And because of basically the Catholics are like, okay, we're going to divide up the world, and we own this part of the world. And so when the Japanese... when he tells the Japanese that, they're like, what? They think they own us?
Very insulted. What? And they're going to replace our leaders and shit? They're like, hold on. Yep. Because Mariko is like the niece of Norinaga.
Yes.
And so she is converted to Catholicism.
She's Catholic.
So
we should talk about her.
Wears her cross. I'm very excited. Yeah. Real quick, Hiroyuki Sanada, when he says to those Portuguese, all right, I'll let you build one church. And they're like, yes!
In Edo, but they're like...
Yes, yeah.
So that's all they want to do. They want to spread their faith, and they want to do business and make money.
Because these missionaries, they would be going out for the crown to make money, find treasures, and spread religion, like, actively, right?
But of course, as we find out, Blackthorn's ship had its own hidden motives, where basically he says, oh, we're just merchants and all this. Their secret motive is to go around sacking these Catholic bases in the name of Protestantism.
They are pirates.
And and then also trying to get to Japan and open up trade negotiations with Japan and saying, hey, there's other countries in Europe besides Portugal. I don't know if you know that, but
the Dutch and England working right. together. God, yeah. History is so fucking funny.
It's wild. Really interesting. And the thing is, like, people don't understand how fascinating history can be because, you know, school made it boring or whatever, but so much of history can be made into like a really interesting TV show like this because it is so fascinating. Right.
Yeah. And
like even Game of Thrones was based on real historical events like the War of the Roses.
About like, but it's just when it comes down to the petty actions of man, sometimes history, because when you look at those Portuguese or Franciscan priests that are with that Portuguese pirate or the sort of pilot or the guy who runs the ship that they're on.
Black ship.
Yeah.
You just imagine in history, like, well, if we were going to do diplomatic relations, it's like now what you would do. You'd be like, well, there's so many guidelines. There's protocols that we have to follow. You've got to do everything right. But back then it was like, well, we'll send three people, but the person they might hire might be like a drunk maniac that might ruin the whole thing. And that's just how the dice roll. It's
hey, like, man.
Okay.
Well, it comes down to your ruler, too. Like if your ruler is corrupt or
if he's having a bad day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
oh man. But I think you see that kind of east west, like we said, the juxtaposition of these elements at work, where it's like the Western focus, like they divided the world up. So to see these guys, like basically doing shady shit behind Torinaga's back and stuff because they don't give a fuck, right? It's fascinating.
I want to talk about Mariko. Let's talk about her in a second. But let me say one more strength to the series because it's what we're discussing. When I think about the last Hulu series we covered, Echo versus this, it's like a Hulu original. Yes, it's not even close. But Jacob, when you keep saying like the Game of Thrones of it all, obviously there's this epic scale. There's the treachery, the backstabbing stuff. But I'll just say the pace and strength of the writing, because we've got these 10. It doesn't feel like we've got 10 because everything is such a slow simmering burn, and the way they get that information out, like all the stuff that Mike just said about like what the secret motivations of those Portuguese priests, it's not necessarily directly said to the audience the first time those characters come up. And I'll be honest with you, by episode 4, I was truly like, why do they want John Blackthorne? Like I kept thinking like, what is the purpose of the Japanese having this Englishman? And when Hiroyuki Sanada says, like, all right, I've kind of hinted at it. I've danced around it. I'm going to very plainly say in episode 4, you're a British guy who knows how to use guns. I'm keeping you here to teach everybody how to use guns.
Right.
The story really – it really banks on you as an audience member just liking the show. That you're just like sitting around until episode 4 where you're like, oh, that's the main motivation and issue that my hero's facing. Okay, I'm still on board. That's great. But it's just a slow drip of information. It's incredible.
Yeah. And great you can writing. See how, you know, Hiroyuki Sanada and John Blackthorne are sort of gaining this begrudging respect and friendship over time. But also the other reason is he's a pawn because Bushido, his main rival, is using these Christian lords on the Council of Regents. They're temporarily allied, but he's also trying to drive them apart because Bushido is not Christian, but two of the five are Christian, and he's allied with them against Torinaga. But so Torinaga is like trying to drive them apart, and that's why you have when they're leaving town, you had the Christian guys' troops are fighting. Are killing Ashido's troops and stuff. So he's trying to make tensions between them because they need a majority to vote him out of the council, right? So he's doing these very devious political.
Only got four.
Right. And then and using all of that too, like because they want to get Blackthorne and stuff. So he's using the rules, like the maneuvering that's happening, like with the three hearts. It's like you see it play out at the rate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like watching it again, I think Jacob would be interesting to see the drip feed.
Sure.
It's hard to gain all the subtleties on first watch. That's why I like watch every episode twice. And the Christian lords on the council want, you know, this Englishman dead. Shido, you know, he might have his own motives too. So it's all just very interesting.
But they some of them truly just think like this savage should not be here, right? Like that is just what they're just like, just kill this white guy. Like, what is this white guy doing here?
Right. And of course, they even hire a assassin to take him out, who's the lady assassin that attacks in episode two.
A brilliant plot where he's like, oh, you know, the master's going to let you stay in his private quarters. It's a great honor. And you're like, what? And then you realize it was all a plan. You know, he's three steps ahead.
They think
Torinaga.
All his household thinks that this assassin is trying to kill Torinaga. But then he's like, no, they're actually trying to kill Anjin.
Because I was sleeping in the room you were supposed to be in. Right.
But Torinaga has all these schemes. He's like so smart. And he doesn't tell anyone really what he's thinking. And then he has a subordinate. Yabushiga, which is like my favorite character because he's kind of like the scheming for himself. But
Yabushiga's literally like, are you ever going to let me in on your plans? And he's like, one day.
Maybe.
Well, he says like to let your heart be known is like death. Like the person who sits the highest is the loneliest. Yeah. Right.
That's why he's trying to cheat his son because his son is a character and his son is kind of like this failed.
I love him.
He's trying to live up to his dad.
Yeah.
Everybody says I'm just like an anemic little weirdo. Well, guess what?
Which is crazy when we get there. Yeah. But that's what it's like. Everything that's said is what is not said. Like Colin was alluding to, it's like where your eye line leads, like the posture, like it's all in the subtext. And that's what's really fun to explore with
it's
this.
Really,
it's kind of breathing.
Okay, if you really knew this culture and watched this show, I can't imagine what you're getting out of it. Because Hiroyuki Sanada, we should say, this is the first time he has ever produced a Hollywood production. Mm-hmm. So he's never had creative input before. And he was like, no, we're getting all of this correct. And again, production budget wise, I mean, guys, you were talking about how, like, you know, some of these castles that they're like shooting in and stuff. Like, the sets are incredible. Mm-hmm. Every time they're outside, it's incredible. The water stuff in episode three, we'll get to it. But, like, the boat photography in this show is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
All the production quality is like top notch. Like, the costuming, the cinematography. Like the fight choreography is like incredible. Like it's all so good.
I don't know if it's a hoppo or if it's a kimono, but whatever John Blackthorne is wearing when he gets to the village episode four, I was like, that looks comfy as hell. I wish I had that whole fucking outfit.
Yeah.
That's a yukata, I think. It's like just the undergarment of a kimono. But yeah.
And let me chill in that. Like, he naturally sort of is rejecting all this Japanese stuff for a while, but you can kind of see where he's like, hey, you know, these Japanese people, they're not so bad. Like, they kind of got to figure out, like, they've got nice, you know, scenic weather and all this stuff. They live in these nice houses. They sit on the floor all the time and just eat their food and stuff. Like, pretty comfy.
Will you guys tell me, what is the cheese stuff? I didn't want to Google it.
Oh, okay. I do know this. Okay. So do you know what natto is, Jacob? Natto is the food that he tries to eat, and they're like, I don't think you're going to like
this. I thought
it
was
like,
you don't want fish this. Eggs or something. Like
no, so thing. I have tried natto one time. And I hated it. I need to give it another try. But what natto is it's really popular in Japan. Or, you know, it's supposedly very good for your health, right? And you eat it with rice, but it's fermented soybeans. And they're really sticky and like kind of gelatinous almost. Like they're really sticky. The Japanese term is neba neba, like really bendy kind of thing. And they smell horrible because they're fermented. Right. So it's
like
really,
cheese, but it stinks, he kept saying.
It smells like a bad cheese. Yeah. Oh. So there's an odor to it, the flavor and a texture. It's a whole experience that's kind of not, Westerners wouldn't be used to it, but it is a common thing. But I don't like it.
I love that scene though, where she's eating it. And he's like, let me try some of that. She's like, this is maybe not for you.
Knowing what it was, I was like, it's not for you, John.
Yeah.
Guys, that is, and I don't know what the 80s miniseries does. You would have to assume it would fall with 80s trope stuff. But that is something a bad show does episode one to be like, how different is our cultures? He doesn't like the weird food that they have. Oh, yeah. The fact that, again, the writing is, this beautiful scene of three people in this kind of forming triangle trying to relate and communicate, like Jacob said, that it always comes down to communicate, mm-hmm. and that he is choosing to, I will partake in your culture in a bit. Mm-hmm. And they just sort of laugh at the genuine moment of that. There's not an ending beat of like, what did you call this again? It's fish penis. Womp womp. You know, like no, there's none of that. There is jokes. It is a joke, obviously, mm-hmm. that he thinks tastes bad, but it's this caring, loving scene still.
He's beginning to engage with the culture, right? Like he's opting in. Like it's not played for
deaths. Yeah. And of course everything he's done up to this point from the first episode has really just been to kind of stay alive because he's a prisoner. He can't leave. He's first he's with his men in this dungeon, right? One of his men gets boiled alive.
Which is horrifying.
Everything he's done to sort of like ingratiate himself to Toranaga and all that is really to stay alive and also to potentially open up trade negotiations for England. So he's really shrewd in that he's using, but he's also gaining an appreciation for Japanese culture at the same time, but he's using that and becoming closer to Toranaga. So,
We learn, but just to kind of get back to why he's useful for Toranaga as well, it's like he catches wind of a base in Macau that has a bunch of Japanese soldiers that have been converted to Christianity that are going to be, they're completely unrelated. It's like they're fighting for the Portuguese. So there's this whole sleeper cell of Japanese people, and they think there was an uprising a couple of years ago. It's like, oh shit, was that them? So now it's like, there are definitely foreigners meddling in our affairs, and like, Norinaga catches wind of that, and he's like, okay, Blackthorn, you're with me. We got it.
And of course, he's also got the secret book that tells what Blackthorn's ship was really doing. Mm-hmm. And so the Portuguese give that to the Japanese. They're like, look, they are pirates. They're fucking trying to
attack
our bases and shit.
Because he's savvy politically, and he says, this seems like it's going to take a long time to translate.
Yes.
A very That's long time.
Right. Yes. That's
so let's talk about Lady Mariko, right?
Lady Maria, as the father calls her.
Right. So I think, first of all, honest why, I think she's really doing a really good job here. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that Godzilla show, but I think she's really doing good in this show. And she's based on a real character too, Hosokawa Gracia, right? Who was a real Japanese lady who did convert to Catholicism. I don't think that she ever met William Adams, the Blackthorn character, in real life. So that's made up. But she was part of the Akechi clan, which was the clan that planned and executed Oda Nobunaga. So,
and the character Samunosuke Akechi from the famous video game Onimusha is a real person who was a minor Akechi clan member, and you kill Nobunaga in that game. So the Sengoku period has been a thing for a while. But anyway,
interesting. But yeah, she is the daughter-in-law of what's his name, Hiramatsu, who's the most trusted general of Toranaga, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that actor too. He's got a very rough demeanor.
He's our Toshihiro Mifune, samurai man.
So she's married to his son, but she also in the past, like she. Her family was killed, or do you know about this, Mike?
I don't know the full, because again, this might, I don't know where this is historical, but I don't know her backstory, but it seems they're alluding to she was maybe of a higher station before an uprising, and then similarly to Norinaga just being a hostage, basically, until he was a teenager. It's like she's just kind of stuck in this position now.
And she says her cousin, who ends up with John Blackthorne, was a highborn, so you'd assume her whole family was.
Well, she said she had a very famous, because she didn't ever said her family name, but it's Toda, right? And it's a very famous name within Japan. It's a very high clan, I guess. Mm-hmm. But she, of course, did convert to Catholicism years before the show, and she knows Portuguese. So she's also used as an interpreter so that Tornaga and Blackthorn can communicate. So she's kind of the go-between. And then, of course, they start to have some feelings, right, for each other.
Now, Jacob, on your second viewing, it is the confirmation she is the one who sleeps with him, correct? It is not a different one of the Coruscants. Why does she deny that? Or what game,
It's for appearances, right? Because his wife can't know that she's getting it on with him. So she's like, we got you this courtesan. And so I hear you have
even
a good
if
time
they both know they have to say
right. Yeah. Prostitute, you're sleeping with me. Oh, okay.
But again, the Japanese in their culture, they had a different view of sexuality than the Christians did, where you could courtesans are not frowned upon like prostitutes in England would be, right?
Yeah. What do they say about Hiroyuki Sanada? He has five wives, they even say, right? You've taken five or six wives, and then he's like, do you want me to apologize? He says that at one point. They're like, no, that's fine. And he's
but even when he first gets there, they're like, oh, you really should pillow with someone, which is what they call
the doctor.
The one scene I watched of the 80s miniseries was the pillow scene. It's basically a shot for shot or word for word. I was shocked.
Nice.
But then they're like, we can get you we can get you a woman.
There would be no pillowing.
He's like, what? He's like, well, do you want a man instead? And he's like, what? And he's very good.
You would have the Tom Hardy guy does, Jacob. There will be no pillowing.
I pillow anyone. I don't want
you suggest buggery? Because, of course, homosexuality was very frowned upon by the Christians, but viewed differently in Japan. So,
but the doctor being like, do you need a some company? And he's like, a doctor, all pimp. You know, it's
when he has to make the distraction, he starts calling those women unclean, and she's like, he doesn't like the loose women are around. They're like, I don't care.
Yep.
He's like, it's improper for you to look into a
gross
woman's carriage.
I don't like this.
Mm-hmm. Someone online cut that scene into. So do you know the scene of the guy who's getting arrested for having a succulent Chinese meal?
Yes.
You know that video?
It's a famous Australian video. Yes. You know your judo well.
Chinese meal?
Look it up.
It's a very funny video where this super drunk guy is just – it's. We used to quote it all the time, Mike and I, when we worked with some of our friends. But someone cut that scene in with that
audio?
Video because he's just going crazy. It's so
a similar energy, yeah. This is Democracy Manifest is what he says at the end.
That's right.
There is a – to bring us back to the courtesaning really quick, there is a culture even in Japan today where like prostitution is not necessarily considered cheating. It's like if you don't cheat in your heart, like the pleasures of the flesh are not the same as betraying like your love.
It's like everyone needs to have a release sometimes. Like it doesn't mean anything if there's not true feelings of love there, which is very different than how the Christians view sexuality because they're very repressed in that kind of thing. So
So with them denying it, even if I think his wife, knowing Fuji, maybe knows, but her and Mariko kind of have to save face. Even if anybody found out, like, oh shoot, Mariko's slept, with the
Anjin,
again, like everything's fucked. Right? Yeah, politically,
you're
fucked.
Here's the thing. I don't need, because obviously they keep pushing the podcast at the end of every one of these episodes.
Oh,
listen to the podcast to understand what happened in this episode. I don't think you need that. Unfolds, and yes, please do. And me not knowing enough about that culture, but just having conversations with you guys, that cements it. But I still leave that scene going like, oh, okay, something interesting is starting up here. Okay. Like
too, where he's like,
he's a little slow to pick up on it, but and then of course he'll
feel better
because
of the company I had, which was you.
It's like
this dumb English guy who's trying to understand their very like precise culture where you can't misstep or you'll get
anybody who is speaking a language that the other people around them don't know, like him saying that in front of his other wife, or the Portuguese guy who's like, "Where's Lord Dumbass?"
he's my favorite.
Like,
like, that is so great.
All these other shithead samas,
like you,
and stuff. Yes.
Of course, he's given this wife who doesn't want to be his wife, and is like, "I guess I'll do it for 6 months because I owe it's my duty to my lord," but because he's made Hatamoto, which is a honorable appointment, basically, or like
a vassal regent kind of positioning.
Give him a job.
Because he impressed Tornaga.
Middle management.
Yeah. And so Tornog is like, I'm making you Hatamoto. Here's
making
your house.
Making you regional
your
manager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Guns.
here's your wife, and then here's your interpreter who you also have a relationship with. Mm-hmm. Pretty good situation for John Blackthorne.
I would.
Yeah. I mean, all things considered, he keeps thinking it's just a bigger cage. You know, he wants to go to my boat.
Well,
where's my boat?
He almost starved on a shipwreck and then got pissed on by a guy and boiled alive. So
every word sounds good to him. The deal's getting sweeter. The two issues are, I'm staying for 6 months. No, I need to go. And where is my crew? You keep saying my crew is here. Where is my crew?
Yeah.
That's the thing. He's looking out for his guys, right? And in the first episode, so before Torunaga becomes involved with these guys, they wash up in this village. The lord of the village is the nephew of Yabushiga, who is an underling of Torunaga, who is sort of working for Ishido too. So he's kind of has split loyalties where he's like, well, technically I'm supposed to be working for Torunaga, but it seems like Torunaga is about to die, this whole clan. So I'm trying to align myself with Ishido so I don't also have to die. So he's got his own motives.
Yeah.
But he shows up in the first episode and boils one of the people alive, right? One of the men, because he's obsessed with the moment of death when someone goes from living to dead. Like, he's just obsessed with that. And then so he listens to this guy screaming all night. And the next morning he's like, oh, write a haiku for me about what that was like.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very funny scene too.
Yeah.
Wild. Even the guy.
I'm obsessed with this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have the reason they're in the village at the end of this, I guess, is, you know, Norinaga, as his gambit is, you need five people to vote. I'm resigning from the council. Your rules gotcha. So he's going to, I guess, Edo right now to try to kind of sort some stuff out with other allies. And then they're staying at the village to do the gun training for a little bit.
So they go back to the village.
He pulls a Trump. He basically says, if I'm not president, you can't impeach me. And it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, especially in the first episode, he's imprisoned at Osaka, basically, where he's like, he's invited to come to Osaka. But essentially, he's imprisoned there. So he has to get out. So he uses this – he has this whole scheme to get out where he switches with a lady so he can hide in the little carriage, right?
Succulent Chinese
I'm
meal.
Your honorable god, and now let me put this little dress on.
Yeah. My lord is known for his trickery. Yeah.
That's cool.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
He's so tricky. Yeah.
Wow.
Here's another, just one more compliment. I'm just going to keep letting them down.
Yeah.
The way this show makes anything seem impossible, where literally they go from like, all right, like Jacob was just saying, we're in this one village. Let's go to this other village. That's a day's hike. You know what that means? We probably won't survive.
Be attacked by bandits soldiers.
What would happen if you needed to like use a rope to go down the side? Like, surely ropes were still good back then. No. Everything is shitty. The quality of anything is fucking difficult to use and impossible to survive. Oh,
yes.
When they say like, you know, we get earthquakes a lot, we have different natural disasters, and that's why we build our houses out of like paper and stuff, so they're as easy to take down as they are to put up if we need to move because of the natural disasters.
Or if they get destroyed, you can rebuild it quickly. Like that whole thing. She says, "What we have death in the sea, on the land, and in the air we breathe."
Tommy's
fucking Gojira.
Yeah,
she
knows all about that. Her ancestors,
like Gojira.
Gojira.
Stay away from Odo Island. Yeah.
But that's kind of the curse of Japan, is that they have this beautiful countryside, but then they have all these kind of problems with it too. So it's kind of a double.
And I guess another contextual historical context is it's really mountainous, so there's not a ton of farmland. So the farmland you have, it's very coveted, and that's why you kind of end up with the warring states, period. You know, it's always, even in medieval Europe, it's about who has the farmland, you know, like and resources, basically.
But I should have fucking conquered Korea by now, Mike, and then I could have left you Japan.
Yeah, I could have given you Japan. Well,
that would have been nice.
Yep.
And actually, the older, like, Hiramatsu and stuff, they were fighting in Korea prior to this. And they were doing maybe not
There was two, historically, there was two attempts to invade Korea from feudal Japan's side. And again, nobody should be invading anybody. And even as much as, you know, we like samurai stuff, it's like, there's a lot of bloodshed happening. You know, that's any period in history. Knights,
but medieval Europe is the same way.
Bad shit's going on.
Yo, the way this show.
We don't condone invading.
No, we do not. But when any characters show up in full samurai armor in this show, it comes off how I felt watching Star Wars as an 8-year-old, where I'm like, well, that character's invincible.
Yeah.
And
of course, Star Wars is influenced by Kurosawa samurai movies.
Darth Vader is a samurai helmet, like with a Mempo.
Toshiro Mifune was almost Obi-Wan.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been great.
All that. Yojimbo.
Yeah. And then you see they keep showing the armor of the old lord just sitting.
Yeah,
and like his
it's like the specter
figure still looms over everything.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So to have his wife give him the swords is like, holy shit. Now they're like, now he's got swords as he's integrating into the culture.
God, that's so badass.
I'm very glad he hasn't trained with swords yet. I feel like
why would they teach him that?
Well, like, they don't trust – he doesn't need to know how to use a blade. He's still kind of a prisoner-esque.
I was a little worried after that third episode, Mike, because peaking with the boat stuff, where it seemed like we really –
my lord would like to race you to the shore.
Don't fucking –
don't let him win.
Fucking be mad about it. It just seemed like that was such a culmination, those three episodes of like, wow, we really got something done here. I felt very opened up and informed about what the plot was. That when we got to this village in episode 4 and things slowed down so much, Mike, where he's like having time to get these swords and have like quiet contemplation. And I just had a feeling that like these sets are ones we're going to be around for a while. I am a little worried we're going to lose some momentum here going forward.
Yeah, I'm wondering because at some point we'll have a big battle in Osaka, I would assume. But we're still setting the pieces on the board. We're training for like X amount of months. So yeah, we could be here for an episode or two at least.
Now that said, definitely, that third one was my favorite. And then the fourth one, I was like, I don't know if I'll like this. And then all that canon stuff was fucking incredible. So
well, that's the thing. It kind of ends on like, oh shit, now things are about to pop off because of Tornaga's son kind of instigating a war. I'm really excited to see where it goes. I haven't looked ahead. Like, not familiar with the plot of this book or anything. So I'm trying to avoid anything because I don't want to be spoiled because I'm just so into it. But it definitely seems like things are about to pop off because, of course, Ishido's men kind of show up. So he's training them to use his English cannons and stuff because they're like, oh, teach us your Western tactics. And he's like, well, you know, I'm not a soldier.
Name one war you were in.
I'm a sailor. I was sailing around, but I will teach you the cannons.
Don't shoot each other at boats. Well, here's the thing, and here's why.
Like, you can't see Osaka, but put my boat out there, and I'll do something.
I'll hammer on that badass.
Uh-huh.
John Blackthorne, the way that they've written him, when the Spaniard says to him, "You're a pilot, Anjan." Yes. Prove it. What would be the latitude and longitude of, well, it's this, that he has such a good head for figures and mathematics that when he's going around talking about the fucking canon, you know, like it's got to be this. And Yabashiga saying like, fucking, I've seen Portuguese cannons before. They don't fucking do shit. Watch this. And when he nails it and they're like, oh, those must be some good fucking cannons. No, John Blackthorne just has such a head for early mathematics. Like, what a weird advantage.
Know the range. Yeah.
Yes.
But I think the English cannons, they do have some kind of technology to make them shoot straighter or more
accurately. Maybe they're rifled or something.
Yeah.
To a degree.
I guarantee
they're longer.
But that stuff's all great.
Also, how big a gun is. Remember when a pistol you shot one time was larger than your arm?
They had to spend a minute reloading and putting powder in and everything if you missed.
Can't shoot up a fucking Walmart with that, you fucking assholes.
No, seriously, one
That's
at
why
a time.
Like, the revolver was such a big invention because like you can shoot 6 times before having to reload. That's like insane.
You'll kill 6 people? That's a massacre.
Yeah.
And then there's a you know, Yojimbo, the bad guy, famously comes back from America or whatever and has a revolver. He's just running around with a gun and Toshiro Mifune's got a sword. Like, what are you doing, you asshole?
Right.
That's right.
That's why even this show, they're like, well, we have guns. We've had guns for a while, actually. Yes. We know how to use them. He's like, well, not like us Englishmen do.
Right.
But then, of course, so Ishido's men show up while he's training Torinaga's men. And Torinaga's son is there with Yabushiga, who he kind of left those two in charge while he went to Edo. So Ishido's guys comes and they're like, okay, you have to come back to Osaka because Ishido's like pissed right now.
Right.
And then Yabushiga is like trying not to upset them, like trying to, but basically once they show up, they know like either we have to kill these guys or we have to go back to Osaka because there's no other way to resolve this now that they've seen us.
So he's trying to play like, I want to show you these tactics we're doing, and you can tell that to Ishida. Yeah, spend the night. I'll show you this cool shit tomorrow. We'll go back to Osaka. You know,
You seen a cannon?
Yeah. Not like this. Yeah, trust me. These are going to blow your mind, dog. We got
the Chinese invented gunpowder.
That's what it's been generally purported.
Noble invented dynamite. Where was he from? He was like German or something.
Probably.
TNT.
Okay.
Dutch, yeah, gunpowder was China fireworks kind of early on.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Marco Polo went to China, right, and then brought back
brought all the
noodles to Italy and gunpowder. Yeah,
that's right.
Never forget, Italian food is American Chinese fusion. Tomato came from the New World. Noodles came from China. Anyway,
well, whoever else did guns, we perfected it. We fucking figured it out.
Won the West, baby. Anyway,
so I think called the peacemaker.
But of course, so they spend the night, right? But then Torinaga's son has his own plan, right? And he's got these other cannons set up across the way. And then he fucking springs a trap on him. And this scene is insane.
When they talk about the chains and it happens and they're obliterated. And that guy says, this is not the samurai way. And he just keeps saying that. Like, you feel that. Before he even has to clarify, when you're like, what honor is there in this?
Right.
The fact that they're all getting their swords and walking up to the corpses to make sure they're dead, you're like, I am not on your side for that. That's fucking bullshit.
But it's kind of, they're desperate because the other option is like to go back to Osaka as prisoners where they'll probably die. Yeah. Like Yabushiga knows like if he goes back to Osaka, like, he's expected to like commit seppuku and he doesn't want to do that. But I was also
thinking about to vote. And just work for it.
Yeah.
I just can't get over him saying that.
I was thinking about how hard it would be to be like a foot soldier of one of these lords because like basically if you lose a battle, like everyone's dying. Like they just kill everybody.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like that's why when people say, oh, if you could live in any time, I'd want to be in medieval England. It's like, no, you wouldn't. Like I wouldn't want to live in samurai time either. As cool as this show makes it look, I would just be a normal peasant and it would be very high stakes.
Yeah, first of all, the likelihood, you would probably be a serf if you were in medieval England. You wouldn't be like a knight or something.
I would be a slave.
I would be
a slave.
Just let me
probably die of the Black Plague before you turn 30. So,
yeah. So, no. It would be tough to be under these lords. It's like, all right.
Yeah. Everybody's and dead even now. The scene where, so Yabushiga sets up this whole plot where he has bandits attack the guys that are transporting Blackthorn and then the bandits kill all those guys and then his men come in and kill all the bandits and rescue Blackthorn. It's like, damn man, like so many people had to die for this one thing to happen.
Why?
And then to get at the ladies out of Osaka, they're like, yeah, there's just too many bandits here, and like even though everybody knows what's up, they're like, yeah, there are, aren't there, you know, and like it's all this maneuvering, but it's a lot of crazy people dying.
Yeah, put the cheap sake out when that woman says that.
We should have had better. Well, we should have worse shit. Yeah,
yeah.
Put the fucking worse shit out.
Yep. Turns out Norinaga's not staying here. Yeah, no, we should get the bad stuff.
He just dips immediately. Yeah,
but that's kind of where we're at now. Like all the maneuvering and subterfuge is over because his son just decided to dishonorably destroy all these dudes with cannons. And it's like, well,
and he's also like
the first shot has been fired.
He's like, yeah, everyone respects my dad so much. I've got to like make a statement as for myself as a man. Like I'm going to do something to really get people's attention, right? Because classic son of a great man type thing, where he's like, I need to prove myself under his shadow and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah,
but this felt like that. This moment felt to me like when the push him out of the window. It was like, oh shit! Like shit's about to pop off.
Yeah.
Like this, it's a tipping point, right? That's what we're at.
Yeah. And I mean, there's people have, compared the show a lot to Game of Thrones, which I think is a very, you know, good comparison because of all the, it is similar writing where these, all these different motives, these different factions vying for power or just trying to stay alive. And
what's being said versus what is being implied and the political maneuvering that's happening, you know, it's all similar elements of all of that. Chaos is a ladder.
Chaos is a ladder.
Absolutely. Exactly what it is. And that's what I love about it. And then we didn't even talk too much about the Portuguese, but they're doing their own thing. And then the Spaniard that works for the Portuguese, Rodriguez, who I really like this character.
Yeah, he's great.
He kind of has a begrudging friendship with Anjin, right?
He's incredible. They're on
different sides of a war, and they're supposed to hate each other, but they can't help but like each other.
You guys remember this guy as the mayor of Dark Knight? Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight. He's the mayor who drinks the poison thing that Joker gives him and his like throat melts or whatever.
Oh, whoa.
I mainly remember him from Lost because he was in Lost. He played Jacob, whatever, in Lost.
Was he on Carbonell. The island? Oh.
No, he was Jacob. He was like the...
one of the DARPA village.
You guys will do
Well, he was like the, he was like a personification of the island. I don't know. That show was
That show's dog shit. I want to talk about a better island.
Yeah,
islands, the Japan.
Nestor Carbonell.
He was Nestor Carbonell, to himself. Great actor. Yeah,
he's great in this. Doing a great voice too.
Inglés. I like you, Inglés. I won't kill you.
I guess also, yeah, because we could touch on their side too. They just want to make mad money, right? That's basically what they're doing. So Norinaga has to like begrudgingly, right? He has to use them to sneak out of Osaka too, where he's like, I'll give you the, you know, the church.
Because Ishido's men are lining sort of the bay.
Like, you have to stay here, Blackthorn. Well, fuck that.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I don't.
Because the Portuguese want Blackthorn dead because he's a... He's a Protestant savage from England.
Yeah, and he literally was coming there to kill them. So it makes sense. But even that whole thing where they keep asking for more. Like, we see Torinaga as, like, the king of all shit, right? And then these Europeans are just like, not good enough. Not good enough. Just, like, disrespecting the fuck out of him.
Well, even
he just
has
to take it. It's really...
Yeah, the captain of the black ship... is kind of at odds with the church too, because the church is like, "Well, we have to do this," and they say, "Like, I don't give a fuck about your religion, man. I'm just trying to make money.
I'm not losing the wind."
Yeah,
we just got permission to leave. Well, they just gave us permission. I didn't fucking ask for.
Jeez. But we know what missing the wind, because the dude's like, we were in Macau for too long, and that's why they were fucking starving on Blackthorn's ship. So, like, it's a big deal to leave on time. I get why the merchant guy wants to get out of there.
Yes,
but the disrespect is just like, damn, bro. That's survival, you know?
It is.
Right. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah, great show. Super well written. Just, I mean, everything about it is just really good. Like I said, the production design, the cinematography, like, I want to shout out the cinematography because every show nowadays is so fucking dark, you can't see anything. This show is properly lit. There's never a scene that's too dark that you can't see.
Well, hold on.
Even, and I think that's amazing.
Even when the narrative function is that they're in small rooms with candles all around Jacob,
it is, you can still see lit. What's happening. It's not like,
give me Castle Snow Gate or whatever it was fucking called.
If you have your right kind of TV, it's not so bad. Like, light your show is better. So shout out to them. I mean, the show looks amazing, and all the costuming, like, it's incredible.
It's wild. It's a triumph. I'm hoping that it holds its quality through the end, but so far it's four episodes, all bangers as far as I'm concerned. Let's maybe hop over to final thoughts. Let's unsheathe some final thoughts right after this.
We're talking the Foot Fist way. No, just kidding.
What,
we're talking a little bit more
what belt level did you get to, Mike, if I can ask you that?
Well, weirdly, my favorite color, I got to purple belt, which is just prior to brown in that system.
And that's prior to black?
Yeah. I think, there's brown. That's I think two levels of brown in that system and then black. So upper intermediate, you know.
I took karate when I was like 12, and I think I got to like orange or red or something, but I wasn't.
That's like third or something.
Yeah. It wasn't very good. I mean, it was some McDojo in Ohio. You know, it's not like.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say mine. I don't trust any of it. Yeah.
Well, right. my friend actually that I was in karate with inherited the dojo from our sensei, and now he runs it. So I know a dojo owner.
Well, it's called Cobra Kai, isn't it? Isn't that the style he teaches?
Yeah, his name's Johnny Lawrence. Absolutely.
That's Eagle Fang.
Yeah, Eagle Fang. But that is a good
wow,
point.
Wow, that's cool, though.
Yeah. So it's weird thing. But yeah, I took karate, but the amount of, I think, Japanese stuff that was influencing our pop culture when we were younger, I want to touch on, because like I took karate because of Power Rangers, which was a Japanese show that was 100%. Adapted, right?
Exactly. Ninja the Turtles, same for me.
All that kind of stuff.
100%. I was into Power Rangers, and that's why I took karate. And I dressed as a Power Ranger or a samurai for Halloween for like 8 years straight.
Yes.
Well, we mentioned Scorpion and Sub Zero.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's 100%.
Ninjas, right. That's the same time period.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just the amount of Japan influence. And that's why, like, even the cyberpunk, not to get too astray here, but like this idea of like Japan and Asia futurism and like the influence because of the car industry and just how much trade we were doing at that time. There's so much kind of back and forth with Japan to the point where it's kind of what Korea's doing now, where we have K-pop and Parasite winning Oscars. Like it was a big kind of thing influencing our pop culture over here.
Well,
that time period.
And it's interesting too, because Japanese history, just recent history, of course, they had a big loss in World War II. They had to recover from that, so they were sort of struggling for many years. But then in the 80s, I believe, they really had a big economic boom due to manufacturing and making all these companies and technology and stuff. So they had this huge boom, and then they had a big cultural boom of, you know, exporting all these cultural products like you're talking about to the West. Mm-hmm. So it's really a success story that they were able to recover from their low point of post-World War II, of course, Gojira
minus
attack,
one
didn't help. Yeah.
That was the big issue.
Right. But, you know, and then...
You know what here now? He's teaming up with that goddamn monkey.
That's right. Donkey Kong and Bowser. The movie.
That's right.
But just, and yeah, like to suffice that to say, like from Kurosawa, you know, in the late 40s, 50s, Godzilla being in the 50s, almost, you know, 70 years of that character, like the rich history of kind of Japanese cinema and stuff and back and forth cultural exchange. It's cool to see this show on TV and not only see it, but see that it's good, you know, and it's from what I can tell as a white person, authentic as it can be. And we have the right creatives behind it. So I'm happy for that.
I think they're trying really hard to make it as authentic as possible. Again, it's based on a book by a white English guy. So it's like,
it's a ton of Asian talent behind the camera though right now, and you know,
instead in the backdrop of a historical, like, it's the characters' names are different, but it's kind of set up in something that you can draw a lot of direct one-to-one real you know influence.
Absolutely.
So I'm super pleased with it. You're right, Jacob.
You were.
I said you guys gotta get on it.
And here's the thing, I get these recs from people that I don't jump on immediately. Obviously, if we're doing this podcast, like, I have to watch one of them. But I could have, you know, there's no fucking rule on this thing. I could have watched the first one and not liked it and come onto this podcast and just debated you guys the whole time and, you know, not watch the rest. I finished it because it was a great recommendation. It's a really good fucking show, and I'm really excited to watch it. So great work.
Yeah.
I knew from episode one, I was like, some shows, you know, they take a little bit to get into. You're like, I'll give it a couple episodes, see how it goes. This episode, this show, after episode one, I was like, I am hooked. Like, I'm watching this every week, appointment viewing, because it is, it is so, you know, it hooks you. Like, you're like, I want to see what happens next. So, great writing.
Literally a classic, it's war, is the cliffhanger line we get this week, so.
And like, what a fucking, like, existential horror that you would be with a translator and saying what's happening, and she would be like, I don't know, this is bad.
Right. Yeah. And the communication themes is so interesting to me, because you're sometimes relying on these translators that are biased in their own ways, and you can't trust them to translate for you accurately. But then, of course, even like Mariko, when she translates, she's sort of politing up what he's saying, right, in a way that won't give offense to the Lord.
She's dressing it up.
Well, meanwhile, he asks that Portuguese priest, well, how can I trust that you'll say it? And when he says, I literally just said what you said, and he's like, interesting, okay.
Well, that priest was also like, I'm bound, you know, honor bound by my faith to, you know, translate you accurately and all that stuff, but you don't
even if I hate
trust
you
him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Goddamn Protestants.
Martin Alvito, who I think will be coming back as a character later too. So
right. But Norinaga's smart enough to have Mariko there just in case, because he's like, everybody could have a bias. He's
practicing Portuguese.
Yeah. He had a check for that as well, you know, because he's
Did I make this up and imagine this? Does Mariko use a fucking Naginata pole arm at one point to fucking stab a bunch of people?
She's doing her own fighting. Fucking, so I was like, damn.
Yeah, she busts out the Naginata. That's right.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah, where they're trying to escape the forest, all that. And then, yeah, Blackthorn is just using a spear, which I think makes sense because he would be familiar with that, roughly.
Right,
like, that's in every culture. And it's actually, like, one of the most OP weapons, if you think about it. Like, it's got reach. You're got safe.
Some space, yeah.
Yeah, same thing with the Naginata. A little bit of space, right? I can't contend with these sword guys. They seem like they practice a lot.
I like when they're talking about the assassin, too, where they're talking about this. It's like this special group of assassins that train their whole life for one kill, essentially. And this lady was like she's called like the maid or something.
She's like a maid for years.
Yeah.
And
she's just deep cover until she gets her kill, right?
Yeah, there's a historical precedent for this in the ninja culture. It's called a kunoichi. It's like a female ninja, kind of a female agent for that purpose. So I guess that would be considered a kunoichi because really ninjas didn't wear ninja suits much. They would dress up like a merchant or a maid. They would blend in and
giant shuriken on their back.
You'd dress like a normal person.
If you're one of these, you know, paternalistic lords, you wouldn't expect a woman to just start attacking you, right? Probably.
Right.
And the other thing I wanted to mention is, so when they're escaping, when they're going through the forest, they get attacked, right? Mm-hmm. And so Mariko's husband, Buntaro,
stays behind. Well, his friends call him Buntaro.
His friends call him Buntaro.
That's true.
He stays behind to like fight out, to like let them get away, and basically sacrificing himself and just fighting until he dies.
Talk about advantage. I mean, again, Mike, that's where I'm like, the samurai armor makes you invincible, because all those other people are like backing away from him, and he's like, come on. He's like lashing at them. You're like, oh my God.
Well, it's interesting too, because their armor isn't steel, like steel plate, like medieval
armor. No.
They don't need it because, you know, for samurai sword, they just need like the wood or whatever it's made out of, right?
It's more of a slashing, so you can kind of get a deflection where there's less of stabbing threat. But
also in medieval, they use like heavy maces and things like that, that are more blunt objects, war hammers and things like that.
Man, when Jonathan Blackthorne is like, yeah, I am married. She's like, really? You're married? He's like, yeah, I'm married. Got a couple kids. And they're just kind of sitting there. And then that arrow gets shot in that guy's neck next to him. And he's like, and he's immediately dying. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Someone said they just described this as like, it's like tension and then shocking violence out of nowhere.
Yes.
Like,
right. And it's always good action too.
It's sudden.
That's, and I mean, that's kind of how Game of Thrones was too. Mm-hmm. At its peak. And Game of Thrones early seasons, they had budgetary constraints, right? But they still had, it seemed like this, where it's like all of a sudden they're being ambushed or something.
And they both destroy a horse in season one. So,
right.
I guess that's his formula.
Or a horse.
But this scene when Buntaro is sacrificing himself so the rest of them can get away, and then Mariko, knowing that her husband's going to die, just kind of has to not show any emotion, because again, that's like their culture, is just you have to
looks away.
And yeah, he's, you just have to hide your true feelings.
Right, and he's kind of shown to be kind of a dick to her a little bit, because he's like, why are you going to the castle? And like, we're kind of getting set up to be like, oh, fuck this guy, Blackthorn's going to get your girl. But then in that moment, you see the heroism, and like, that's why he's respected, because of his warrior spirit.
The fucking highest honor, Hiroyuki Sanada does a little bow at him, which is all right. I did it. My whole life was for that.
And then that's it. Yeah. So that's what really sells that.
That's kind of like, your whole life. You're like, at one point I might have to die for my lord, and it'll be like my greatest honor.
Might.
Yeah.
100% certain chance he will use me as a shield at one point.
Very likely. But yeah, I think that was an interesting bit of nuance to give this heroic moment to a character they were kind of painting as a bit of a jerk to Mariko, but it's like duty
even
is
when
such a thing.
When she's talking about him to Blackthorn, she's like, he's... You know, he's like, his friends really love him and respect him. I'll just say that.
He's a
great warrior. He's a great warrior. Oh, okay. Anything else about him? He's a great warrior.
Like, yeah, it's one of his best qualities.
Yeah. One of his best qualities. Every character, because yeah. again, even that mm-hmm. guard who's like, "Don't talk to my lord that way," and they're like, "Hey,
kill yourself."
Quiet. It's like, you're right.
And then they give the head of the
guy's family is a big character.
Yeah, right. And they deliver the baby and his head in a box to the wife. Yes. And it's like fucking crazy.
That's messed up.
This is what you get.
Not only do you have to kill yourself, but you also have to kill your firstborn, who's a little baby who didn't do anything, right?
Your entire family line has to be done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody scuffs Jacob's shoes, and I'm like, you're going to treat my man like that? And Jacob, you're like, hey, settle down. Don't do an outburst like that. And I'm like, you're right. I'll go kill myself.
Right.
Like, the idea, it's like yeah. all he was doing was being like, you are treating him unfairly. And they're like, hey, shut up.
Right. But he should have concealed his true feelings behind the eight-fold wall, right?
The eight-fold wall.
And just the way that Sonata has to play that, where he's like, oh, you think that was an insult? No, dog. You know, he's like, I hope you accept my apology of this guy killing himself.
Which is you dying.
Yeah. And the guy's like, all right. Oh, guess we're not escalating. Oh, it's so tense.
Again.
Yeah.
That stuff is beautiful. The coolest part. What I'm just getting at it from a casual viewer of, like, I'm not kidding about the isekai stuff. When mm-hmm. it's like the travel, it reminds me so much of the original isekai, Gulliver's Travels, is a Englishman who ends up in a foreign country who just wants to go home. The longing. It reminds me of the island of Dr. Moreau, an Englishman who ends up on an island who just wants to go home. I know that sounds repetitive, but I'm not kidding. Mm. That style of storytelling where you know your protagonist is going to be a put-upon person who, almost like Job, is going to go against the trials of Jesus to fucking come out on the other side is exciting and cool. And it's just really good storytelling. And in part, I kind of hate that this fucking white guy is like the big name behind all this stuff. I'm glad it's just called Shogun and that it's not like,
well, really, it's
LaVille's Shogun or something.
Oh, yeah.
God, the Blackthorn Chronicles.
Well, I wouldn't say Blackthorn, he's one of the main characters, but I would say there's three main characters, which is, you know, Torunaga, Mariko, and Blackthorn.
And maybe Ishida is the foil. Yeah.
One of them is acted by the most unusual actor I've ever seen, who I am now obsessed with observing. Yes. And his name is Cosmo, which does
Cosmo
add to
Jarvis.
The weirdness of the man in my
yes.
Have we seen him in anything, Jacob? Would I know him from anything?
I don't know. He wasn't in he's not in too much. He's sort of this is sort of maybe his breakout role.
It deserves to be his breakout. I hope a lot of acclaim from this.
People compare him to Tom Hardy. And of course, I've talked about my love for Tom Hardy many times on this podcast. As an actor, I think he's incredible.
Who's the guy in Upgrade? Did you see the movie Upgrade?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's another Tom Hardy-like
kind of
guy.
That was my knockoff Tom Hardy. He has been replaced, whatever that guy's name is. This guy, Cosmo, is my Tom Hardy now.
Cosmo Jarvis. He was in a movie called Calm with Horses with Barry Keoghan.
I'm seeing a credit for Annihilation. Don't know what character. Yeah, I know Barry Keoghan.
Oh, and I assume, is he an Irishman then?
He's British. But
he is
was
British.
He was in Lady Macbeth with
Florence Pugh.
Lady Macbeth.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen him in some stuff then. He has never popped out for me even with the long hair, he didn't look as like what I'm dialed into now, where I'm like, that's John Blackthorne. Like,
well,
that's,
you sent me,
almost El Muad'Dib or whatever.
He's a white boy in a strange land, just like Muad'Dib.
Yeah. No, and you had sent me, I sent to the chat, like a woodblock or, you know, a classic Japanese painting of what Blackthorne was supposed to look like, or that Adams person.
A depiction of William Adams drawn by someone, a Japanese person.
And he was a savage.
And I was thinking, would he have a beard? Would they just clean shaving him? But then when I saw that depiction, I'm like, I guess they let him have a beard. They're like, don't shave it all the way. You know, I was like, okay.
Right.
A curly-headed Brit who popped out in that country and was like, rah, rah, I'm having the Japanese.
Well, that's why
throws a cross on the ground.
What is this? I'm drunk. Bring me sucky.
He's like a little he's like a gremlin. That's why I'm obsessed with him, because all the Japanese people see him as this dirty gremlin who won't bathe two times a
week.
You
haven't killed the barbarian yet? Like a couple characters like say that, where they're like, you're letting that stray dog live here?
Right. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about Gulliver's Travels and isekais and stuff too, I was thinking, this also reminds me of, did you ever watch that Marco Polo show on Netflix?
I didn't.
Yeah,
Benedict Wong episodes. Played Kubla, who was the leader?
Kubla Khan. Yeah, Kubla Benedict Khan. Wong Khan. Was sort of the star of that show. And then Marco Polo was an actor that I don't know very well. But
similar.
That was the original, like Game of Thrones, like where they're like, oh, let's greenlight this show. It's got politics.
Netflix.
Yeah. Yep. Like, we need our own Game of Thrones. Let's get Marco Polo.
No, they had 2014.
So that was
they
10
had the
years
sex and the violence. You know,
yeah.
I remember pitching that.
Very similar kind of show.
That
was like,
why does this work?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. Like, because
I watched it too. I didn't finish the first season though. I don't know why. I just didn't continue watching it.
Yeah, I started it. And didn't continue watching it either, so I'm not sure. But
it is a similar thing, though, because he just has to basically, you are with this lord now for the next, till I get back. Sorry, dude, that's what you have to do. You're with him.
Yeah.
Do what
it's
he
like
says.
This European coming to an Asian country and becoming an advisor to a leader and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, it's like going to jail when somebody's
kind
like,
of
you're his property now, and you're like, okay.
Yeah. Not really a guest, let's say, kind of thing.
Right.
So,
yeah. You're not free to leave, but you can, you know, sort of live in comfort while you're here.
Yeah. Fascinating. But yeah, I'm loving it. Even when his wife points the gun at those guys and it's like, get the fuck out of here. And they're trying to confiscate his guns.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
He's like, he's dual wielding.
He's like, she will, you know, protect my shit, even though she hates me. Cool. You know?
Tell the Anjin to give me the guns.
Yeah. No, that's all great.
Man, what a show. What a show.
Yeah, what a show. I'm looking forward to watching a new one. Daisuke.
By the way, the Marco Polo show, the executive producers and the people that directed the pilot and second episodes are Norwegian pirate boys that we're going to be talking about with Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Whoa.
The directors of that movie. So give
it
a
shout.
What a combination. Kaizoku, the old pirates. We're back at it again. We can't escape piracy.
Well, I was holding this in my pocket, but the number of One Piece references, there's a character named Sengoku. There's, you know, there are people who are I'm the daimyo of Kuri. Is Kuri a place in Japan, Mike? K-U-R-I? No?
Not that I know of
Kuri.
By name, but... Yeah. You know,
there's just a lot of period stuff where I felt like this must be so ingrained into their culture that even Oda-san just is like, well, let me just get all this out. You know, it's they just must. Love
oh,
it.
Yeah.
So, I wish there was a Jonathan Blackthorne character.
right. No, and this period is like, you know, it's like cowboys for us. Like it's this romanticized time period. It's in all their pop culture. Like I said, Nobunaga is the villain in so many games. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so
it's interesting that he's the villain, but not the hero.
It's
because you could look at it that he's also a hero in some ways too. But of course, that's what's so interesting is it's like
damn Catholics out
all these different factions, these different daimyos fighting each other. It's like if America, if like all the 50 states were constantly at warring with each other over land and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Well, I love what Mike just said, because sometimes when we do stuff like this where I'm like, is this against the premise of our podcast where it's like normies like us? It's like the thing that like all of pop culture is consuming. Those are the topics we'll go on. It's like Japanese book. But like Mike, what you just said, where it's literally like Japanese culture views essentially this time period this book is covering as the thing that sums up their whole culture, where it was like Americans and cowboys and this period of samurai.
Westward expansionism, freedom.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like sure, that, sure. Like, of course, it's like, and Jacob, what you were saying about like the first miniseries was like the number one TV movie miniseries. Like, watch me.
Like, everyone was watching
Roots.
That.
It's like, of course. Yeah. Which, when are they going to remake Roots, by the way? I'm
they
shocked.
Did already, right?
He's fucking done that. Oh, really?
Cuba Gooding Jr., right, was in it, or was he in the original one?
That's the original.
In the remake, Cuba was in it? Maybe not. Kunta Kinte? I fucking hope not. That he'd be very old at that point.
That's true, yeah. No, I don't know. I never watched
2016 they redid it.
Okay. Really?
I've only seen the original.
Again, a huge book. I mean, that book was such a phenomenon.
And Roots was a huge
miniseries
in the time. Yeah. And actually, this Shogun, the 80s Shogun, got made because of the success of Roots.
Because people want more of this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow.
And this, it swept, we should say the original swept like the Emmys and the Golden Globes. Like, it was a phenomenon.
Oh, so. This needs to get, costuming, like you said. Like, this should get a ton of noms.
I hope so.
And this, again, it's a Hulu. I think it's, is it AMC, Hulu?
FX, it might be FX on FX. Hulu. I think it might just be a Hulu original. I don't know.
Okay. But I know the numbers are very good. Like, it's the most watched thing on Hulu since, I can't even remember, but it's a big hit for Hulu. And, you know, nowadays, like I said, we don't have the cultural... we just have a lot more options where back in the day, like there was like three channels. So everyone was watching the same thing, right? Now you have a million different shows, million different streaming services. But in terms of today, this is definitely a hit, maybe not on Game of Thrones level yet, but people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's normies are getting into it. And Hiroyuki Sanada even said in an interview, like he's hoping that this will, get Western audiences more familiar with Japan. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing.
I'm a sleeper build kind of weeb. You know, I like Japan, and being a fan of this stuff, I like that this is hitting, and like Japan is kind of having a moment with Godzilla Minus One, winning an Oscar and this show doing well. So I love to see that. Cause they have kind of generally produced content for Japan. It's just what I want to say. Now that it's getting a little exposure.
Of course, anime is a big thing for a lot of people. And, weebs can get a bad rap sometimes because some of them can be very obnoxious or just like idolizing Japan and not realizing.
Or like reductive kind of viewpoint of.
Jacob, here's what I was fucking horrified and worried about. When you were like, it's based on this famous novel that a white guy wrote. And it's about a white guy going to Japan and back in the day. That fucking racist web cartoon guy just got fucking exposed, stone tossed. Oh, yes, I don't know if you guys know him.
In his
human form, he had a bunch of tweets as a white loser guy with, tall glasses, kind of looks what you would assume as far as someone who was interested in Japanese culture. Had a bunch of tweets that were like, hey, I'm in Japan looking for a wife, white guy, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That is such a culture and just an amount of shame that you do want to push down these weebs. I was horrified that's what this show would be. So
that guy is like literally a Nazi.
No.
That guy is a Nazi. And if the worst example, but those people do exist, unfortunately.
Right. And to bring like the other version of the story we've seen, The Last Samurai, that's like the homie like kills her husband and then marries her. And like that's like so fucking crazy that they made that choice.
But also, Japan is really proud of that movie, too, because, like, when it came out, it like, won, awards in Japan and stuff for, like, best foreign film. So they really liked that America was making a film about Japan. But I do think it's more reductive than
Too Many Minds.
I would just like to point out, too, narratively, The Last Samurai is Hiroyuki Sanada, that movie. It is not the white guy. I promise you, Tom Cruise is not The Last Samurai.
He's not The Last. Isn't
what's his name? Let Them Fight.
I thought it was Hiroyuki
Sanada. Sanada is in it, though.
Sanada is the guy that trains him.
He's always briefing him, right? Yeah.
That's right.
But Ken Watanabe is The Last Samurai.
Yes.
But this, I think, certain people can fetishize Japan or put it on a pedestal where they're like, oh, everything in Japan is amazing. I love anime and stuff. But I think there's a way to appreciate Japanese culture and media without being obnoxious about it.
I think there are some people who will watch the show who unfortunately will be like, yo, look at those subservient women. That's exactly what I would want. The show is better than that. And it's going to be.
Right. Well, I think that's what's so interesting about the character of Mariko, where she's not just like this subservient woman. Like she has her own thing going on and like she's more complex than you would think.
She has to pull the levers available to her in the structure of that society, but there's agency and very well written character. Like, I'm loving it. And even Blackthorn, like, we don't know what the fuck Norinaga's thinking because Blackthorne has no right to know. Like, we're just as lost as he is. Like, he's not right. pushing the plot. He's being dragged along it, you know, reluctantly.
His plot is, I want to get home. I want to find my crewmates. You're so right. That's all it is for that character.
Yeah, and I think so. I love that. Yeah, he's not the hero.
The sort of white savior trope, because, he's not the hero. He's just some guy who got shipwrecked there, who has his own motives, and all these lords are using him as a pawn, but he's not coming in and being like, I'm gonna like challenge this lord to a duel or something. Like, he's he's not that guy.
When he's got his little peeper out and his little thong sack, you just look at this guy and you're just like, you just feel pity for him. You're just like, look at this pathetic little guy.
I do love that part after that whole escape and everything. He's like, my lord would like to study your diving technique. He just dives a bunch of times.
Again.
Keep doing it.
I kind of got to lay down for a minute, man.
Yeah.
Then you're going to race me to shore. You just dove 300 times.
In freezing, freezing Japanese water. Can you imagine what that feels like?
Yeah.
But cool, I know, the lord, like, to be like, all right, let's do this thing. You know,
Hiroyuki Sanada is doing an amazing job because, like, I'm like, I want to impress this guy. Like, this guy is so, like, respected and stuff. Like, I feel intimidated. I just want him to like me, basically.
Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, basically alive at his whim. But, like, he's crushing it, you know?
Yes.
And, you know,
he's just got a presence to him that I think
if this maintains, you know, he should at least get nominated Best Leading Actor in a limited series. And I think Best Supporting could go either for, you know, Mariko or Blackthorne, but he shouldn't get leading. That should be
Best Actor, Hiroyuki. Best Actor.
Cosmo will probably get leading just because that's...
No, I'm with Mike. No. I think you submit him as supporting. I think,
but they could both be leading, but then Cosmo might win. I don't know.
Strange voice. I just think
what the voters would do.
We need to be given some flowers maybe to a great career for the Sonata.
No, I agree. I totally agree. But I also think Cosmo is doing great. You know, Tom Hardy from Timu. I won't even disrespect him because I think he's improved on being just a Tom Hardy knockoff to me. And now, look, I'm easy to please. You know, if you do like a weird voice and a weird accent, like I'm down, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah, I love it.
If you had to act in a movie right now, Jacob, would you be like, I'll do what Tom Hardy does. I'll do probably the most
weirdest.
I'll do the Bane voice.
I need a lobster. If this show was a person, I would certainly pillow with it. That's all I'm saying, you know.
Yes, Mike. Yes. Pillow. Yes, pillow.
And if this, you know, if this sounds good to you and you haven't watched it, I say give it a chance because this show gonna impress you.
If
you watch it.
I can't imagine. I mean, I'm gonna hit it up to everybody I know. I know that my dad's not watching this yet. I believe he watched the original miniseries, so I think I'll say to him, "Hey, Richard Chamberlain, out. Weird Tom Hardy,
Cosmo."
Yeah. No, I pitched it to my mom, you know, and my mom and stepdad, they watch shows like Game of Thrones and stuff too. So I was like, you gotta watch this show. It's really good. It's based on history, and you just visited Osaka, so you're gonna love that angle of it.
So, like, cool.
Hell yeah. And they were hooked on after the first episode. So it's something that anyone can enjoy, I think. And I do recommend, I think you should watch the sub version because I really think you get that sense of, like, you can't always understand what the Japanese people are saying because you're not intended to, just like John Blackthorne can't understand what they're saying. So I like that disconnect of communication.
And there, I should have said this up top, but like the structure of language in Japan, if you're familiar, it is hierarchical. Like there's a level of respect you show people by the way you pronounce and conjugate verbs, etc. Like there's a formality of language when, like we said, we don't use sama for him. So you're losing that element of the culture.
I love it.
I called it pronouns in our One Piece episode, Mike. It's honorifics. It's honorifics, the suffix that they add. And it's just, and also just the order they
say things is different than English. So like if you're saying, Colin, I will do something, they'll say like, I will, or they'll say, do it backwards.
It's subject, Colin, object, verb, something I will do. It's like Yoda. But
cleared it up in my mind.
The simplest way though, it's like arigato is chillin', arigato gozaimasu is slightly more polite, and gozaimashita is more polite than that, right? But they have an even level above that in this, you know, which is crazy.
It's like,
so you
old
lose
fashioned.
That.
Yeah, which is like, look at the ground.
You,
I like when, you know, like Westerns and stuff where they talk kind of old fashioned, they have a different dialect. So that's what you're saying. That's kind of what this show is doing, where they're talking in a 1600s dialect rather than a modern Japanese dialect. And
yeah,
I really like that.
Imagine.
I wish incredible. I knew Japanese.
Yeah, like some of the root forms of the verbs are there, but I'm like, what is this conjugation? It's really quite interesting. So
yeah.
And just a little funny anecdote. I love samurai stuff, and I didn't even know we were going to go to Tokugawa's gravesite. I was doing a filming thing with my buddies, and I wasn't sure what they were doing. It was a local tourism video for Japan, and I didn't know. I was like Blackthorn. I was just getting brought along. I didn't know what the plan was, what we were shooting every day, and then we just ended up there, and like, yo, this is Tokugawa's gravesite. I'm like,
what? Is it like a temple? I mean, is it like really
It's a big
honoring?
Urn. It's like a big cast iron urn on top of a mountain, like up in the mountains, and then just below that there's like giant temples and all these gifts. There's a giant Dutch lantern. There's gifts from other samurai and like fiefs. It's like massive. It's this whole structure. But then his thing is just like a cast iron urn about 10, 15 feet tall sitting in this forest. And it is surreal. I was like, damn, who knew? So anyway,
that's so cool.
It was really cool. I think I never expected to have that. So that's my samurai anecdote. Awesome.
Anyway. Well, I'm very jealous of you guys having expanded culture. That's very cool of both of you. So
yeah. No, I've definitely been in I might have mentioned this on the podcast too, but recently I watched all of Studio Ghibli's, all of Hayao Miyazaki's films. So I've been watching a lot of Japanese media recently and really getting in. There's a lot of themes of Buddhism and nature in his movies that I just love, and I'm just really interested in how sort of Buddhists see nature differently than other people.
Well, so. Jacob, I might fucking rewatch Throne of Blood, because that must be around this period, right?
Oh yeah, it's all Kagemusha, Ron, yeah. All that is based on
Colin,
this.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I subscribe to the Criterion Channel, like a film snob would, and I put on Yojimbo the other day because I was like, let me put on some fucking classic Kurosawa samurai movies. I put on Yojimbo. I was like, damn, man.
Fucking R2-D2 rolled out. You were like, all my favorite characters are here.
Yeah.
That is my favorite one.
Throne of Blood is based on Shakespeare, right? It's like Macbeth.
Ran is King Lear.
Throne of Blood is Macbeth. Yes. Yeah. Ran is King Lear. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so this, we love samurai stuff. And like we said, it's the cowboy equivalent. That's why we have the Seven Samurai getting made in the Magnificent Seven. And Kurosawa is inspired by John Ford. Like this kind of back
and forth. It all leads to Rebel Moon.
Just different cultures.
That's right. All roads lead
to Rebel Moon. The culmination of all culture is Rebel Moon.
Without Hidden Fortress, there's no Rebel Moon or Star Wars.
There's no Nemesis.
No Nemesis.
God.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah, this is
great. Right. And I want to say arigato gozaimasu to all of our listeners out there, all our normies.
Arigato gozaimasu. Honto ni otsukare sama deshita. Everybody that made this, otsukare sama deshita. It means we really good work, everybody. You say that at the end of the day. Otsukare sama deshita.
All right. I'm going to eat these fermented soybeans.
Natto.
Or mung beans. What did you say they were?
There's fermented soybeans, and it's called natto, and I think they are natto very good. But they're supposedly healthy. I'm going to give them a run. Because this show is so good, I will buy natto, and by the next day.
I don't know.
You can get it.
All right.
We love it.
Well. If you guys have any recommendations, listeners, if there's anything else sort of in this world, we would love if you hit us up at normies_like_us. And if you said, if you guys like Shogun, here's the isekai anime I recommend. It's called Anjin Pilot Blackthorn Lost in Sad World Try to Get Home. Sounds familiar. I'd say, that sounds like a pretty good show.
Yeah. And broadly, I guess this genre is called Jidaigeki. So
what is that?
It's just like the Edo period drama. It means like period drama, but a Jidaigeki is kind of Western. Like that's our term of a cowboy movie. There's samurai period, Edo period is Jidaigeki.
Is Son, and shout out to Akira Toriyama, like we said up top, but is Son Goku, which is, I guess, get based on like Wukong, right? Like
The Journey of the West.
Wukong, Journey of the West. So it's like a weird translation. Yeah. But is Son Goku, is any of that supposed to be like Sengoku?
No, I think that's all just kind of Journey to the West, space stuff. Yeah, it's kind of its own universe. Yeah.
Fascinating. It's a beautiful language, beautiful culture.
Mm-hmm. And when Toriyama was like, this Goku guy, he's actually an alien. Do you think people are like amazed or like, how did
what the
feel?
Fuck are you talking about? It's like, hey man,
right? He has a tail, or does he have a tail? I don't know.
Yeah, he has a tail. I think he has a beard. I think he has a curly beard, and he looks like a demon, an Englishman.
I was a Dragon Ball guy. That's kind of a blind spot for me.
But he does have a tail.
I respect it. And
you have to cut off your tail so you don't turn into a werewolf monkey during a full moon.
Basically. Yeah, see, I like that. I like the tail aspect.
No, you have to cut it off, though.
With a katana.
Or it'll be a werewolf monkey. But anyway, unrelated. Jidageki Chambara is like sword play movies, just to shout it
out.
You
know what else? Just the truly, truly the last thing I want to say. Because I want to know you guys if you have these as well.
Yeah.
When I was watching this, and that moment where Marika says, like, she wants you to have these swords. It's her family swords. She wants you to hold that legacy so that you can protect yourself or whatever. And it's this beautiful, touching thing. So much of Japan is culture and history passed down to each other. In my mind, I had a flash to 10-year-old Colin sitting in our rec room where my father sits me down and says, "See this little katana? Your grandfather got it off of a Japanese guy he killed in World War II, and it's ours now." Wow. Do you guys have stuff like that? Like, it's
no, not in
there should be a way to return that stuff. I don't feel good about having any.
No, you won that in combat. That's your
I don't
now.
Think that's fair. I don't
that's
care.
That's the Tom
about
Cruise
it.
Rule. No. But yeah, I don't have any of those personal. Yeah, I can't include in our family. I know.
My grandfather flew bombers in World War II in the Pacific Theater. So I don't think he killed anyone in hand-to-hand combat or anything like that, though. He was just a pilot.
That's good.
So he was an Anjin san.
I don't think mine did either. I don't know how he had this sword.
Sometimes you just might find one. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and just lie.
Yeah.
Souvenir.
Tell a story. All right. Horrors of war. Horrors of history.
War is bad.
If you like history.
Peace is good.
Watch this show. Peace is good. If you're not having conflicts, hit us up at normies_like_us. Rate, review, subscribe. We liked it a lot. Hit us at YouTube. Otherwise, we have been your hosts. This is, I'm going to say Colin Blackthorne with my little dick hanging out.
No, there you go. I'm going to say a name for my friends. It's Mike Aru.
Mike Aru.
It's not my true name. And this is Anjin Kobsama. The best sea pilot in the Japans.
All right, well,
arigato.
We're your normie donos. Have a good one.
That's right. Arigato gozaimasu.
Arigato.
How about you?
My name is Gandalf the Grey, and I'm imploring you to leave a like, share, and subscribe to this podcast. Don't keep it secret. Don't keep it safe. Don't take me as a conjurer of cheap tricks, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Normies Like Us. Fly, you fools!